Welcome back to the Hero Fallacy, where we dismantle the myths about heroism, leadership, and success. I'm TJ Trent, and I work with people who are tired of the burnout and bravado, the fake rock stars, people who actually want sustainable thriving. Each episode, we challenge a comforting lie, examine the real behavior underneath it, and give you practical ways to build system standards and resilience so you don't need heroes in the first place. If you're ready to trade drama for discipline and mythology for mastery, you're in the right place. And today, I'm super excited because I have a guest. His name is Rashawn Warren. He's a lieutenant colonel in the Army. He's an air defender. Don't hold that against him. We know that ADA stands for another damn army, but I've worked with air defenders. They're great. He's great. I'm excited to have him. And so introduce yourself to the audience, Rashawn.
All right, everyone. I am Rashawn Warren, Rashawn Dwayne Warren, the official. I am an ADA officer, and I am a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army. And I will tell you this, I am not a hero. I am just an average guy who came up pretty tough circumstances, and I made it work. And I'm glad to be here today with you, TJ. I really appreciate the opportunity to get on and get some things off my head and share some perspective, and I'm ready.
Well, that's great. Let's, I like running towards the gunfire every once in a while. So just to, what's the first thing on your mind this today?
I guess on these days, the first thing will be on my mind as it pertains to leadership is how you react to it. There's a multitude of different leaders that are out here, and especially in the Army, you have a different organization. You're always working in, it seems like every 2 to 3 years. And with that, you get another leader. And we're always trying to adapt to these folks, which is fair because everyone does it differently. But sometimes, it becomes pretty rough, especially if you work with somebody who's been pretty good, right? So if you work with somebody who create a great culture, who was very inquisitive or helped develop you or was always listening and just fostered your growth. And then all of a sudden you're working with somebody who does none of those things because it's not their strength. And now you have to figure out how to adapt in order to remain effective and not only for yourself, but within the organization as a whole and all of your subordinate leaders and try to bring them along.
It's interesting that you say that because I think one of the common myths we hear is that leaders, the more senior ones, right? But at a certain point in your career, everybody's, more senior than you. But I'm talking about maybe at the commander battalion level or something. But in general, the myth you hear is leaders need to adapt to the people that work for them. And when you were saying that story about the transition and stuff, one thing that came to my mind was is the staff a lot of times needs to, because they've been there a little longer, and most times, a commander, sergeant major is only there for 24 months maybe, and a TDA billet maybe a 36 months in a maybe 36 months in a in a in an MTO unit. And but the staff sometimes is there a little longer, has more. They are not in a bad way, but they're the bureaucracy, right? They're running the day-to-day functions of the unit. And so I think just rather than us expecting that one person is going to adapt to the way we're doing things, I think we have to look at how the new boss does things and help enable that process. And I'm not saying there's not give and take in any relationship. There's give and take, but it's just when you said that, it's one of the myths that I think we tell ourselves.
As we talk about that, I think about a new person shows up, right? And maybe you've been working a particular way for maybe 2 weeks, I mean 2 years, if you will, because each person receives information differently, right? And then you get another person, now you have to transition all of that. Everyone has to adapt to that one person in order to get the thing going. But then you got to also ask yourself, like, how long does that take? You know what I mean? Like, maybe I'm a high caliber individual, and I was like, all right, I understand what to do. I'm gonna adjust this. But really, what has to happen is now you got to go back to everybody, and you got to say, all right, staff, folks, S1, S2, S3, S4, S5, whoever's out there. The way we've been doing it for the last 2 years, we can't do it that way no more. So now we have to learn how to do it differently. I had this conversation. Well, I really didn't have a conversation. Somebody told me once, hey, you send me all these emails because I'm trying to make them aware, but they said, you're giving me too much work. You're giving me extra work. But really, in my mind, I did all the extra work because everything that I had to figure out how to get to you, I had to go research it. I had to go find it. I had to package it. And then I had to get it to you. And then I had to come find you in order to help you understand it. You were just in receive mode. But I think that's one thing that we don't do well sometimes as leaders. You know, we show up, we're at a new job, we're trying to make sure that we start off on the right foot. And we forget that there's a lot of work that goes into getting someone up to speed so they can be effective. Would you agree?
Yes, and while you were telling that story, I mentioned yesterday when we were on your show that Jeff Cole, legendary ADA colonel that I worked with, I was the G3 Sergeant Major. He was the G3, 32nd WMDC, and he is the epitome of what you just said, the preparation, right? And I've never. He's at Congressional Liaison's office now, and I'm sure he's doing wonderfully. But he by the time he sent you an email, he had prepared, he had laid the groundwork, he had done the prep work at his level to make sure that it was ready to hand off. And I think that's what you were talking about. And a lot of times we see things not we don't look beyond our foxhole, so to speak, or we don't scan our left and right limits fully, and we understand that not only did the battalion commander change, but these days the brigade commander changed, the division commander changed, and the division CS and all, and as it happens now some days, all their sergeant majors changed. And people come from different backgrounds. They're going to process information differently, and so I think we have to, like you said, look beyond just what we're thinking. Oh, you're just trying to give me more work, and be like, hey, the boss, the colonel, who sergeant major, whoever, where, whatever industry or sector of business that you're in, they probably, if they're handing this off to me, there's been some level of prep work. They're not just, or they trust me to deal with it. And sometimes, and I always tell people, ask some people ask me what my priorities were. I don't have priorities. The colonel, the commander has the priorities, and we adjust our actions, our tactical things on a daily basis that we're doing to get to those priorities, to
I
achieve
think
them.
that, I agree with that wholeheartedly. But I go back to, am I getting the guidance that I need, right? Just think about how many days you were at work, right? And you're doing your thing. You're being the best version of yourself. You're working on the things that you think you're supposed to be working on. And if no one tells you, hey, TJ, I need these things from you, and then tie it to time and say, I needed it this time, and I need it this way. If no one's giving you those things, you're gonna just start working off of the last things that you had. Whatever was in your mental reservoir previously, you're gonna do every single thing that's in your mind until someone says, hey, we're shifting focus now. We need to start doing this thing. And I think that gets lost on leaders too. And I'm not saying it gets lost on junior leaders, whoever's in charge of something. But I'm talking particularly about senior leaders, right? Like, how many things you get at the last minute? How many things pop up on the plate? And now you know, like, hey, shift to the secondary target line now. And all of that stuff that you've been working on has to sit now. And I'm not a fool. I understand that things pop up, but if things are popping up consistently, that means something may be wrong with the organizational structure and how information is being handled appropriately from a knowledge management perspective. Or maybe you just squirreling like squirrel, like someone who's out in the cut, and you are not truly in tune with what's supposed to happen. So therefore, as a senior leader, you can't push those things down to keep everybody else in alignment. So the middleman is trying to keep everybody in alignment, right? The XO,
Yeah.
the X3, Rashawn's in the middle, like hooking and jabbing. But I'm like, all right, hey y'all, check it out. They told us we're doing this now. And then what happens to the staff? The staff is like, dang, man, we were just halfway done with that, you know?
To start MDMP all over again.
All we missed a step. They didn't tell us we was going there. They told us we were going to Kuwait, but we going to Iraq. That's a whole nother set of things I gotta worry about now, right? But that kind of goes with the territory sometimes. But I'm talking about also in the organizational sense. In the organizational sense, that thing needs to be streamlined as well. Like if you're running your executive coaching stuff, you're like, you know what? I'm gonna show up. This is what I told people. This is my vision. This is what I do. And I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna go straight down that line and make sure I get them to what they need that I can provide, that I'm qualified to provide. And then if they say they need something else, now it may take some learning from you. You know what I mean? Like you can shoot from the hip, but eventually you're gonna have to revisit again, right?
Yeah, I think what you just said, there's a lot of scope creep sometimes. And what we're doing, in the Army, but I think part of that is we've complicated our strategy. And I remember one time I was in 2ID, I was staff sergeant. I wanted to become at that point a warrant officer, or I thought I did. And I had gotten the letters that I needed. I was going to get the one from the battalion commander, who's a special forces guy. This guy, he's a good dude. Rode his bike every day from Seoul up to Camp Red Cloud because his family stayed down. And he asked me a simple question. He says, "Staff Sergeant Trent, what is the Army's mission?" Boy, I said, I had the most beautiful, sophisticated answer I thought anybody come up with. And you know what he said? He looked at me and he says, "It's to wage war and kill people." And that has always stuck with me, right? And so this scope creep and this constant changing, I think, is because we've complicated our strategy, right? You look at our strategy, and I know that somebody's going to disagree with me saying that the Army's mission is to wage war and kill people. But very simply, it is. And when we look at it like that, and we look at and we manage our we that if that's our strategy, if our reason for existence, our mission is to wage war and kill people, then our strategy needs to be something that enables that creates a framework for action. And so, if I show up for work, and if the mission originally is to go do XYZ and it changes, it's water off a duck's back. It doesn't matter because we're reorienting into what enables us to achieve our mission within that strategy. And I don't. I think we've lost that necessary level of simplicity, and we get I think, and this brings up another myth. I love these conversations because this happens so naturally. But another myth is I think that we need all these social media influencers are making a positive difference. I think there's a couple that are. There's a couple that make me laugh, and I think there's many more that are enabling Russia and China to be successful in the cognitive warfare realm, which is really how they wage war, right? Because they can't reach out and touch someone like we can. Nobody can project combat power like the U.S. So I think we've gotten back from this notion that we just complicated things. I remember a much simpler time when, showed up at the motor pool. And then, sometimes it changed. Sometimes you got called before you got there. Sometimes they changed it at PT formats. Hey, we're not going to motor pool today. We're going to the library to conduct area beautification. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying we've lost, the simplicity of it all. And I think that's at echelon, right? I don't think it's limited to a specific level. I think we've just lost the simplicity that we've had in previous eras.
No, I can agree. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about ever since I was a youngster in the military, we typically get the operations order and it says, hey, this is what you guys are doing. Think about how many times you got that thing and you're like, man, what is this? What am I supposed to do? Like you're looking at the thing that's supposed to deliberately tell you how you're supposed to operate it. Now you're trying to decipher it. Now you got to go find somebody and say, hey, you know what? You sent this thing down to me. What do you really want from me? Right. And I think it's one, I'll go back to things are happening so fast and we're in a fast-paced environment and I understand and I get it. But if you want me to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, and then I come to find out later that only F was important, there's a lot of power that we could utilize in other on other efforts that have been lost, kind of going to the social media point, right? There are people out there who are keeping people heads up. They're giving perspective, and that's what I believe social media has allowed. But it's like anything, which perspective do you want, right? Like whatever you look at, the algorithm is going to say, hey, this is you. If you're trying to get smart and you're studying and you're getting after things and those are the type of things that you're looking at, you're probably going to get smart because the algorithm is going to continue to push those things to you. If you're looking at the beach ball team or whatever, you know what? You're going to see 10 things about the beach ball team. If you're watching boxing, you're going to see 10 things about boxing. So I would say that was a good point. I would say if you were a social media person, go back and scroll through and let the algorithm tell you who you are. Write those things down and say, you know what, this is where my focus is right now. And that can be translated to leaders also. All leaders aren't created equal. You can have all the certifications, you can have all the classes, and you cannot have the intangibles. You can possibly not be able to get people to follow you. And you're like super duper smart, right? Or you're probably so rocket science smart that nobody understands you because your emotional intelligence is low and you didn't realize that people aren't getting it. So when I say things are complex, kind of leaning back into what you're talking about, I could see how an individual, i.e. leader, could get lost. But at the same time, what is the mechanism to reel people back in? And say this is where we're supposed to be for the good of the organization.
I think, I think we see an attempt to reduce to get back to a more reductionist approach to things. And I see that in the elimination, of all these unit level social media accounts. I think we need to, you go to the Wendy's on W.S. Young, you go to the Wendy's in Harker Heights, it's, the slogan's the same. The culture's the same. And so I see it, I use that as an example because it's become complex. It's become complicated because, as a commander, how many days, how many hours did you spend on any given day, not out with, not focused, at least during the day while everybody was there, dealing with the pop-up targets, the call from the CG or the division star major about a lieutenant colonel who refuses to take off her earrings in a tactical environment and says that it's because, we don't appreciate, you don't appreciate her as a woman or as a person of color or beards, beards and, just stuff that's just shaving off the your focus on the actual, on the actual mission, right? I was just before I got on, somebody was explaining that they were or an officer, they were in the Navy, and they've had a beard for a while, and how when they were on subs, they would for morale, the CO would allow everybody not to shave. And I was like, so we create our own, we just created a subculture. We created a new culture that we created a new culture to capitulate to not people that had a medical need, but I guess out of some pie in the sky dream that if we allowed them to not shave, they'll be better, they'll perform better, and I think that's another, that brings up another myth for me, which is the myth that I can motivate you, that I can, I think we are motivated. And yes, somebody's going to, challenge me and say, well, there's such thing as extrinsic motivation. Yeah. And, me seeing you and seeing your success and seeing how cool your video for your podcast looked and how well, it's executed gives me the motivation, the hope, to know that it's possible, right? That if I maybe took some of your advice, that if I followed some of your mentorship, that I could likewise succeed, right? But the concept that, I'm going to motivate you or demotivate you, I think we give it's a myth that you can motivate me. What's going to motivate me are my beliefs, which affect my beliefs affect my thoughts affect my feelings affect my emotions, and emotions affect your behavior.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
so I think we are in an era where things, getting back to your original point, have gotten unnecessarily complex, and they never were easy. I'm not saying that, but you can have a level of simplicity.
I would say a sergeant major told me when I was a second lieutenant, said, LT, just lead from the heart. That's what she said to me. I was like, I want to be good in the army. What do I need to do? All she said to me was, lead from the heart. And I ran with that because if I led from the heart, I was going to do all the things that I know that was my responsibility. I was going to do everything that I was supposed to do. I was going to be the standard, meaning I'm going to stay in shape. I'm going to be smart. I'm going to stay competent because I'm going to look at the manuals and see what's required of me. Because whatever expectation I set for myself, other people would at least see that, man, Warren cares. You know what I mean? And sometimes when you just care and people see that you're working hard, they don't want to let you down. You know, they're like, you know what? He's working hard, I'm gonna work hard. But I also try to stay just who I am, you know, like I am very open book. I would tell people like, hey man, I ain't smart, I'm scared. And they were like, what do you mean you're scared? I was like, man, because I don't want to mess up. I watch other people get shot down. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want that to be me. So I go back and I study. I go back and I really put in the work. I go check people like, hey man, you know how to do this thing? Because I just learned it last night. Let me teach you. But I'm gonna go back to a point that you just mentioned about I think it was Colonel Chaplain Shabazz who said that you can either manipulate people or you can inspire people. And the manipulation part is I'm tricking you. I'm trying to do things for my own good. I want to win. I want to succeed. So I'm putting out this facade that like, hey man, I'm trying to help y'all, but really I'm just worried about my evaluation, you know, my promotion. But if I'm out there and I'm trying to inspire you, I'm showing you what you could be. I'm showing you what you could achieve. I'm showing you that you can get knocked down and still get back up and win. Because when you're trying to inspire people and you falter, people know you were just giving it your all. You were trying to be a winner and you was trying to help them. But when you manipulate people and they figure out that you try to manipulate them so you can win, now the whole blocks are going to come crashing down on you because you're going to lose all that support and you're probably never going to get it back because the emotional part of humans, of people, that's kind of what we lean on the most, right? So if somebody pisses you off, if they piss you off at work, you might hold it in, but when you get to the house, you're going to be like, hey, guess what happened to me at work, babe? You know? And then now you're going to give all that stuff to your family, to your friends. But if you're out there inspiring and then something happens, you're going like, babe, check it out. Guess what happened today? This dude did this and it made me feel good. Or I did this and the troop said, hey, TJ, you know, I'm really proud of all the things you're doing. You're making me feel good about my life. My family really knows you care about us, right? So when I think about those different things and how we approach, and this is not a military thing. Most of these things are organizational things, family structure things also. You know, when I think about those things, I just think about the different type of people that are out there. How many people out there are trying to win because they genuinely want everybody to win? And how many people out there are trying to get theirs, you know?
I think everybody's out there trying to get theirs, and I like to Ch Chaplain Shabazz is amazing and he's inspirational because he has demonstrated for us what is possible, right? Through his tenacity, his grit, his determination. He's amazing, and he's also been unapologetic about telling, you know, kind of the other side of it, which is, you know, you can, you know, sit around and complain about the people you think are being manipulative, or you can do what you can do to make sure that you perform at a level that is that's recognizable, that people are going to recognize, that's going to get you where you need to be. And the other piece that I thought about when you were sharing that story is, we're all in it for something. You know, I always tell people, even a not profit is in it to not for profit is in it to make a profit. They're just using the profits differently. And so we're all in it to get something. And so I think the best, like you said, the people that will resonate with us are the ones that are going to help us. It's going to be a not what's in it for me. It's going to be a what's in it for. It's going to be a win-win. We're creating the win-wins for people. And I'm gonna be honest with you, towards the end of my time, I saw that becoming, less and less of a thing. People, NCOs at the E7, E8 level, just rigid, inflexible. I know how this is supposed to be, and you shouldn't be, questioning me. What? You're not the name's not on the dotted line. You don't, you're not the one, so this rigid inflexibility doesn't help, either. This we have to I got a great story. That's why I paused for a second. And so to give an example, somebody that doesn't, what's in it, it's only in it for themselves, was a guy in my unit. We had a huge training contract. So people were getting all the training they would need. He was one of the ones that would take advantage of it. That was a good thing. But, 30 certifications and, what are we getting for it other than you telling everybody that they're an idiot and your way is the only right way and you're rigid and flexible? It's taking, I know you can resonate with this. It's taking, 30 days for our people to get accounts to sit on, to get on the network. And no, that doesn't, unacceptable. I don't care.
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable. They need to, we can have the level of security and oversight that we need without it taking 30 days. Again, that was an example of somebody who was kind of on the side of, I want what I want and I don't care, what the organization or other individuals are getting. And it's sad. And we talk about the morale of the unit. It eroded my morale to have to deal with relatively senior people in the organization that, just refuse or to see that they're part of a bigger element and that that they can we can create a win-win, but nobody will, you're not going to win if you just you be rigid and inflexible.
I think there's two things that go with that, right? One is that, the whole acronym team, right? Together, everyone achieves more. That's a true statement, right? The more you train people to do things, the less you have to worry about them. I would tell people all the time, we learn with the intent to teach. Every single thing that I've learned over time, whoever is underneath me or to my, right or to my left, I was like, hey, oh, check it out. This is what I learned. Because the reason was I wanted everyone to feel that they had some buy-in or they probably were on the kind of like the same level, right? So if something went down, I know I talked TJ over there, I know I talked Jen over here, and somebody else can pick that thing up and run with it, right? Or those subordinate leaders down when we talk about mission command and things of that nature, hey, mission command, we say, hey, the youngsters know what to do. If something goes wrong, I taught them. I taught them just as I have learned. I make sure I send them to get the education that they need, and I'm open to them coming back and teaching me and say, hey, sir, check out what I learned. And I can say, oh yeah, that's money. But you know what? With experience, I've learned this. And then now we're collaborating now. We're growing the organization. Because I can be the commander. Just say I'm the commander. I got all the best deals in the world because I'm the super smartest guy that you ever seen in your life. But I'm not the one executing the mission. I am not the one executing the mission. I'm getting some additional guidance, data from people that my subordinate leaders aren't getting. Then I start pushing that thing down for my team to formalize a plan that we can execute. Ooh, this cough is getting
That is the same for me.
But yeah, that's kind of how I see it. You know, there's a lot of things going on. The doers are the one putting it all on the line. Because the doers, I heard one time, like, the soldiers are the doers, you know, the non-commissioned officers are the doers, you know, some officers are the doers because they're the one out there toting the gun on the battlefield. They're the one that's clearing that house. They're the ones clearing that door. They're the ones saving lives. And then some of us officers and senior NCOs, I'm not saying that's bad, good, bad, or indifferent, but we're going to get to a position at some point with throughout our career with the time we put in where we're watching it on the screen, right? And just because you're watching it on the screen doesn't mean that you can not still understand how it was when you were the doer and you were out there putting your life on the line, or if you will, you were the one toting the gun on the battlefield. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one thing that came up to me as you talked about mission command, and everybody loves to quote that one line that talks about centralized intent, decentralized execution. And if you and if you and you're micromanaging, if you don't allow somebody to do X, Y, and Z there, you know, the way they specific way that they, you know, they want to do it. And what we forget is that there's like that's one sentence and like three or four pages that outlines the whole concept of mission command, right? It's you can't reading one sentence is like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. The other thing that I would say is that you can lead a horse to water. You can, but you can't make them drink. And this tie, you know, I love the conversation, but it calls all ties back to this unnecessary complexity that we talked about. And I'll share this story, which is I would always try. My position, I knew what was, you know, I was in on all the conversations. I knew. So I would try either where appropriate, where I could, to just directly say, hey, this isn't gonna why you may want to, you know, redirect fires before, you know, the colonel, whoever calls down here and tells you to do it. Or I would try to explain. And so one time I had a situation, somebody volunteered to come to my unit in Kuwait. And then all of a sudden puts in a PAR, whatever we're calling it now. We used to call it 4187. I guess it's called a PAR now. Personnel action requests in the new IFSA. And I get a call from Brigade Sergeant Major. He's like, this guy wants to leave 6 months early so he can get his spouse into college. It's like it's a 1 year tour. He wants to leave. I said, Sergeant Major, I said, please just tell the S1 to. I said, I haven't even seen that. I said, I don't even know how it made it. I said, apparently they went directly to the Brigade S1 and we've had this conversation. The folks need to start just sending stuff back when it hasn't been properly escalated. Point is, I tried to pull him aside and have a conversation with this person, the E7, and he was intractable. He refused. I explained to him that we were going to be like 30% of E7s. And he said to me, well, not in my MOS. And I tried to explain to him, hey, that E7 is relatively senior. I'm going to use, we use you where we need to sometimes, but I can't let some, you know, the you know, town commander, brigade commander's not going to let, you know, they've already made it clear they're not going to support this because that puts us under 50. We'll be at 50% strength. Manny overall, and HRC is not going to give us a backfill for somebody that we voluntarily let go. And they were, like I said, intractable. We try to help them come up with other scenarios like, hey, why don't you take leave here? Go get your spouse can start the PCS process without you, and then you can come back, finish up, and we can probably let you go 30 days early, but not 6 months, And the person was like, I volunteered to come out here. You should be doing this for me because I came out here, for you. And you try to explain, and the problem too was is the leaders at that level were unwilling to be the bad guy, so to speak. They were unwilling to tell this person that, his performance didn't support this. Not only one was he not performing, but two, he was asking for something that he couldn't do. And three, he was just being intractable, asked, well, what do you want us to, or who's going to pay for this? If I take leave, is it going to be chargeable leave? Well, of course it's going to be chargeable. You expect. So, it's that, again, this ties back to that complexity. And it ties back to what people, like you said, manipulation and people, and it happens at both, it happens all the way around. I'm just using these examples. I'm not saying that people in my position or your position aren't manipulating. But what I am saying is that if we simply acknowledge that everybody can win, and we had that attitude, it would create a lot of thriving for a lot of people. We're not going to win all the time. They took away the Sergeant Major parking spot at the PX. It's totally not a win, for me. But it's a win for the additional, empty parking space. So that's my thought on that.
I agree. And when you go back to the topic of surviving and thriving, I had this conversation one time with my son, and he was playing basketball when he was a young kid, and he's limping. And I asked him, I said, "Rock Kemp, I said, are you hurt or are you injured?" And he's like, "What?" I was like, "I see, are you at risk of damaging your body? That means you're injured. Are you at risk of damaging your body?" He says, "Nah, Dad." I said, "So can we wrap this up and you can keep it moving?" And he was like, "Yeah, Dad, we can wrap it up." So we wrap it up. He gets back out there. He continues the ball, but a lesson is taught to him at that point, right? Like you're gonna survive that, guy. Now you can go out there and thrive. But when I think about surviving in the midst of the world, survival is the lowest level of living. You can go hide in a corner and gunshots are blazing all around. Animals, gorillas, tigers, whatever's out there. You're in the corner, you can't be seen. You're surviving. But you know what thriving takes? Thriving takes some will. Thriving is painful because you got to put in some effort. If you want to thrive in any particular thing, you're going to have to work for it, because some of us got some natural ability. We can get out there and do some things. But if we really want to separate ourselves from the next person, if you will, talking about in a sports metaphor, you're going to have to do more work. You're going to have to work harder. You're going to hurt some arms. You're going to be sweating. You got to run the extra miles. And that's the same thing in an organizational sense. Do you want an average company? You know what I mean? Do you want to just make a couple of dollars, or do you want to be a top-notch organization, which means your learning curve is going to be higher because you're going to be doing more. Your employees are going to have to be more confident and competent. You yourself is going to have to be a continuous learner if you want to thrive. So I think the military is like that too. I know I just talk about the organizational sense, but I'm gonna like line it back up with what I'm currently doing is that every step that I took, or anyone that's around me that took, that catapulted them somewhere else, they did something extra. Like, you ever heard the some people are extra? Well, some people are ordinary, and some people have a little extra to them. And some people are extraordinary because they have that extra and they paired it with that ordinary. And then now they took off. And we see people like that every day, right? Like right now, you with this podcast, you with executive coaching, you pursuing the doctoral degree. Those are extra things. Those are things that you added to your ordinary already, because everybody don't got those things, and those things don't come easy. You feel what I'm saying?
No, I do. And I think it comes down to one word, in investment, and in investing in yourself. And this is, I learned this a long time ago from my father, but you have to have some skin in the game before you ask anyone else to put some skin in the game. Meaning, great example, as I see all too often, leaders think, well, hey, man, Colonel Warren needs to let me go to this class. Why do I need to let you go to the class on in-flight missile repair? Why? What's it going to do? I got it. You'll be the only person in the Army certified on in-flight missile repair, but what's it do for us? Besides, the fact that I'm the only person that can unclog the toilets in the entire battalion the whole 12 months that you're gone to this course, So again, what's it gonna do? Why should I? Well, because this is, and that. And so what are you doing to, you want me to invest in you, but you haven't invested in yourself. You haven't done the things necessary for you to be KD complete. You haven't done, you're never at any of the social functions. All your peers are burning the midnight oil, so to speak, helping out with the mandatory fun days, organizational days. All of your peers are doing these things, and you're at home smoking cigars on the back porch, and you haven't even done the basics, to invest in yourself. So why am I, how does it make sense to ask me, or the organization to invest in you when you haven't done for yourself, right? And so I think, I know that when you were talking about that, it made me think of investment. And I maybe, again, I used the example yesterday, as some of us have the personality that it's, we have to pull the pin on the frag grenade and throw it into the living room to, that's the kind of excitement we need in our lives, or the level of purpose or something we need in our lives. We enjoy, the volatility. And when Colonel Shabazz called me in 2020 and basically said, "Hey, you graduated with your master's a while ago. What have you been doing with your life? Why don't you consider, pursuing a PhD?" And in his unique, varied way of expressing that he cares about you and your career. And I said, "You know what? I think I'll start it." And he said, "Don't worry about how to pay for it. I'll show you how to pay for it on the back end. Just get it now." Because I expressed to him my wife was concerned. And so, $300,000 later, maybe 260 is more realistic, but I just rounded up. That investment in myself is starting to pay off. Now, I had to believe in myself. I had to have enough esteem and worth and efficacy of myself to believe that I would be able to, to to pay that back and not totally, bankrupt myself. But it also kind of helped me keep pushing through the kill zone, so to speak, when things got challenging. And so what I try to create for myself every day is that is I call it either, that basic, basic training, or maybe you want to think of it as the Olympic Village. But I make things as easy, as simple, not easy necessarily, for myself as possible. Meaning, you think of basic training, you think of the Olympic Village, or even OCS. What they have, they had gyms, they had all the resources you needed to be successful, right? And then it was, there was a routine. And so we need those routines. We need to invest in ourselves. And that's that part of making things, making things simple. We need to make it simpler for ourselves to succeed, so that our focus is not where it needs to be. And then we can, once our focus, we know where to focus, then we can concentrate on specific things.
Yeah, I kind of tied to, I was having this. So as I'm getting ready to leave, and transition out of the military, I was having a conversation with one of the youngsters, and purely this is a purely army thing. So the youngster is like, sir, why is everybody having problems understanding air defense? I say because they don't care about it. They were like, what? I said, they don't care about it. I like, honestly, they do all of this planning every single day and they never factor in the thing in this day, and they just most likely going to get them. I said, because let me tell you this. Every time that I talk anything with air defense, I understand what the infantry is doing. I understand what the people on the ground are doing down there. I understand what the fires guys are doing. I said, you know why? Because that's going to help me appropriately employ the sensor systems or the engagement systems myself. And I'm like, so if I'm doing that, what is stopping them from saying, like, man, I need to protect this thing so I don't get blown up? You know what I mean? I need to understand what's going on. And I think that is one thing about life. I mentioned that to you because I think it's about life as well, right? You have to understand what's going on around you in order to flourish. You know what I mean? You can't stay on your own continuum. You got to look at, like, I guess if we're talking Marvel, I don't know if you watch much of Marvel movies, but if you want to be on a different timeline and all this other crap is going along in the universe, like, you're going to get lost. You have to be aware of it in order to succeed. You have to be aware of the opportunities. You have to be aware of the threats to what you're trying to do. So you can manipulate the timeline, if you will, or you can alter things as you're moving down the road in order to be successful. Because if you just say, I'm going to jump on this train track and I'm going to take it all the way to the end, and at the end, I'm going to win, probably not going to happen like that, brother. You know what I mean? You're going to run into some curves, some bumps, some rocks, some sticks, some whatever else is out there in the world. And you just have to understand that they're there so you can be prepared. So when you get there, now you can act accordingly. And I think people are missing that. And I'm not going to say everyone's missing it because, sometimes I get one-sided too. And I get punched in the face and I'm like, oh, didn't see that coming because I wasn't fully aware. But I think we all, as individuals, this is not a leader deal. This is not an army thing. This is just as individuals, we all have to be aware of what could possibly happen to us. And we also have to be aware of what opportunities that we can take advantage of to catapult ourselves toward success and whatever that means, because it's not the same for everybody, right? Success is not the same for everybody, but whatever your success is, you need to understand, like, hey, these are the things that's going to help me get to that.
Yeah, it sounds to me, to me like you're saying you need to understand the operational environment, and then you need to work to shape the operational environment.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I that's why I love my time in the army. And I think, there's some social proof that organizations and leadership and training certainly has been taken from, in large part from the military. And so the understanding, you can't go in blind. At the same time, as Colin Powell said, and I'm super paraphrasing, but some 70, 80% sometimes is good enough, because the work that you're going to do to get that other 20 or 30%, is it, that level of certainty is not achievable. If you look at I, General Eisenhower on D-Day or before D-Day, and the weather, shifting, that wasn't that was them understanding the operational environment. Hey, you're gonna have crappy weather for a while, monitoring it, and then being able to shape it because they were engaged with what was going on. So, when that hour went, that window of relative calm opened up, then they were able to, they said, okay, we're gonna take, we're gonna land on Normandy. We're gonna begin the invasion. And so I appreciate, I think we'll leave it there, but I want to give you the opportunity to end with the final words today.
Well, well, first off, I want to say thank you, TJ, for letting me come on your podcast and be a part of what you got going on. I think it's always amazing when people who have knowledge are willing to share it. I think that's, some people keep it to themselves, but these are platforms that people can get some perspective. Am I 100% right? Probably not, but you know what? I'm telling you what I see, and I'm telling you how I feel. And that's just part of human nature for all of us, right? So if people are unwilling to listen and understand and attempt to comprehend, then you're going to be at a loss. But for everybody else out there, I will leave you all with this. I wholeheartedly believe for those of us who are able to help develop other people, we have to take a step back, look at ourselves, and say, really say, what do I have to offer? Maybe your position right now will allow you to talk to multiple people and people will listen to you, particularly because of your position, but your position will be gone one day. And when your position is gone, then you will realize whether you really were who you thought you were, because you might not have the big audience again. And also, I think there's three types of people, and I've said this in some different venues. I think there are winners. I think there are losers. And I think there are people who have yet learned how to win. And those people are the ones that need us. Those are the people who are seeking that guidance, who are seeking that information, who are seeking your perspective in order to get into the winner circle. And with that, I'll just say again, thank you, TJ. And I think everybody out there that's listening, I hope y'all took something from this. And that is my two cents in the world for this day.
Well, that's the end of the podcast today. Thanks for joining us here on the Hero Fallacy, and hope to see you again next week. Have a great day.